Happy to be joined by Congressman Garrett Graves, a little D.C. current presented by LABI. Normally we have the congressman on Wednesdays, but we were out on location yesterday, so I greatly appreciate his flexibility to move over to Thursday. Congressman Graves, how are you, sir?
I am doing great, Brian. How about you?
Doing very well as well. We get so much ground to cover today. You know what? Can we start in the state, though? Because there's a special session going on right now tackling crime. And I know this is something you've been dialed in on, not just from your seat in Washington, but here locally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brian, what's so important on crime is that we do have local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and federal law enforcement all working together. But it's not just law enforcement. It really does have to include the prosecutors. It has to include the judges. It has to include the folks that are running the prisons. This is a full-scale effort that needs to be focused on all of these coordinating efforts. Because, look, the reality is you get the best police force in the world and they're arresting these people. If the prosecutors aren't prosecuting them, if the judges are slapping them on the wrist, if they're just putting them in prison where all they're doing is sitting around with a group of people to perfect their crime skills, then all we're doing is making this worse. And so what we've been doing is we've pulled together folks from FBI, ATF, Secret Service, all of the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement agencies, the Marshals Service, sat down with Louisiana State Police, sitting down with our local sheriffs, with our local police chiefs, talking through the role that each can play, where they have assets and capabilities. We're actually working to try to get a federal task force comprised of additional law enforcement officers and U.S. attorneys down here in Louisiana to help this surge in crime. Brian, I think this is one of the biggest challenges that our state is facing right now, particularly in some of our urban areas, but it bleeds over into some of the suburban areas, and it is outrageous. We're further empowering criminals. They need to be held accountable. So what we've been doing, number one, we funded some crime diversion programs, grabbing the kids younger age to where their role models are not gang members and drug dealers. Instead, it's recreation, it's education, it's people that are positive role models in their community. Brian, we found that evidence that's being processed for crimes has a one-year backlog. That means criminals are on the street for a year. So we've been able to provide additional funds to get rapid DNA technology, new technology for example, Sheriff Gautreau in East Baton Rouge to where they can process this evidence within days, not having to wait for the backlog of the state police crime lab. And we've even funded efforts on the back end to where you take people out of prison, you put them in a kind of secure workforce, work training program to where you give them skills that aren't sharpening or perfecting their skills for crime, but instead addressing some of the needs in our communities, working at plants, welding, things along those lines. So it really is important that we address this from A to Z.
That work program aspect of that, what does that mean from a cost perspective? Because a lot of the questions about scaling back time for good behavior and parole restrictions and whatnot, a lot of folks are bringing up the potential cost as an inhibitor to passing legislation. What does that program look like? Because it feels like that would kind of offset some things.
Yeah, great question. And look, you know, one of the other things that drives me crazy, so I can sit here and talk about we ought to be tough on crime and keep these people in jail for 300 years and all that stuff. But look, you can have somebody who's in a maximum security prison. It could cost $150,000 a year to incarcerate, feed, health care, all that for these prisons. $150,000 a year, that's coming from us. So that drives me crazy too. But one of the solutions or one of the reasons this work program is really good is because as they develop skills, they begin working for employers that then pays to help to offset the cost of their quasi-incarceration.
Right.
And so, you know, this really is, it's a win-win because these are job skills or job openings that are holding back Louisiana's economy because you can't find people to work in some of these fields. So they're getting the skills, they're getting the training, they're going to work for these companies, or maybe even working just in a warehouse, again, secure location, but they're doing things that are needed in Louisiana, and it's helping to offset the cost of incarceration. So this really is a win-win, and of course it puts them on a trajectory for self-sustainment to where they're no longer on the taxpayer's dime once they've met their sentencing guidelines.
And then once you have work-related skills, you're more likely to land a job. And if you're more likely to land a job, you're going to reduce recidivism by, I believe the number is 35%. So that 150,000.
In some cases, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that money you were talking about on the front end, you can nix that from their next time being pinched for a crime and going right back to jail. Because if they're not going back to jail again, you don't have to pay for them again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly why this makes sense. I've said this twice, but instead of having them in jail where they're sitting around with other criminals, you're sharpening or perfecting their criminal skills. You're giving them a new pathway. You're keeping them in a positive environment to where they will once they're released, they're going to continue down that pathway and once again, be self-sustaining and not coming back to prison, not on the taxpayer dime, and becoming productive taxpaying members of our community.
We got Congressman Garrett Graves with us. Talk a little bit about the crime fighting aspect in his gig. All right, Congressman, let's when you're in the U.S. House of Representatives and you're trying to affect change here in Baton Rouge, you're talking about a citywide level, a parishwide level, a statewide level, and a federal level. What goes into the logistics, the coordination of getting everyone rowing in the same direction here to find what their jobs are at each level up the chain?
Well, and Brian, that's why we've pulled together meetings with federal, state, and local law enforcement to let them talk through. I mean, the last thing in the world they need is someone like me coming in and telling them what to do. They're the law enforcement professionals. So we sit around and talk about capabilities, skills, and expertise, and then begin kind of putting the puzzle together. Okay, y'all handle this. You're better at this. You've got these capabilities. And in fact, some of the things we've discussed is using the federal crime laboratories to help address some of the backlog. The state is also contracting out some of the evidence processing to, again, to break this backlog that they've got to where we can process evidence much faster, get these people held accountable much faster. So that's really our role. Now, the other thing is that you will have different federal crime statutes where, we think that the penalties are too light. And so, One of the ways that you dissuade crime is you have strong penalties. And somebody starts thinking, wow, if I'm going to go bring drugs across state lines, that potentially puts me in jail for 30 years. I'm going to think twice about that. So that's an important part of this.
Speaking of crossing state lines, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention broadening this out to our crisis at the border and what effects that has on a local level.
And I was meeting with folks from local law enforcement recently that were telling us about this exact issue, about how major fentanyl coming across the southern border that is complicating and causing them problems. The immigrants coming across the southern border, everything from human trafficking to the MS-13 and other gangs from Mexico and South and Central America, bringing their style of crime here, which, they have no respect for law enforcement. They have no respect for law-abiding citizens. And so this is a huge deal. And they were going through the numbers, telling me how much this is costing them as a result of the open southern border, the illegal crossings that are happening, which is another reason, one of hundreds of reasons why we've got to stop this ridiculous open border policy that we're seeing at the southern border.
No, absolutely. And it should be an all hands on deck or all ideas are welcome mentality to work on that. There was news out late yesterday that President Biden is looking at enacting some of the policies that former President Trump had at this point.
And amen. Look, this really shouldn't be partisan or political, Brian. Mm-hmm. This is people that are illegally coming across the southern border, so they're breaking the law. They're bringing fentanyl across the border, which is breaking the law. They're human trafficking across the southern border, which is breaking the law. It is enriching cartels and what they refer to as transnational criminal organizations to the tune of billions of dollars a year. Billions of dollars. What do you think they're doing with this? You think they're giving it to community service projects and nonprofits? No. All they're doing is expanding their criminal empire. This is awful, awful policy. And every single border agent that I've spoken to has said the exact same thing. You've got to go back to the Trump administration policies. This isn't necessarily a law change. This is just policy change. I will say that I do think after the Biden administration makes the policy changes and does everything they can in their power to secure the border, We then come in and look what else needs to be done. We did pass legislation, H.R. 2, out of the House of Representatives. We've been waiting for the Senate to pick that up for several months now, that sort of takes things next level, including strengthening the standard for asylum claims and things like that, to where you can't just come in and be coached by some attorney and say, just say this and they'll let you in, to where we have to have credible fear, credible threats toward these folks as part of the criteria to allow them to come into the United States.
We got Congressman Garrett Graves for a couple more minutes. Two more I want to touch on. One of them is about fighting crime as well. Every law enforcement outlet out there, whether you're talking about state police, parish sheriff, or local police, is looking at staffing shortages right now. I don't know that this is a 100% monetary thing, but what can Congress do to help alleviate some of those shortages here locally?
Yeah, and look, this is one of those things where I think you have to be careful, because if this is a local hiring issue, I think you start getting messy if you have the federal government coming in and funding local employees. I mean, you have a funding stream, you have different everything from millages to sales tax and other things, and I think that local governments need to develop budgets and funding streams that sustain their priority missions, and certainly law enforcement is one at the very top. Mm-hmm. Number two, some of the things that we've done is, instead of coming in and providing things like that, is we've said, hey, look, there's this new technology. It's expensive, but it looks like it's really promising. We'll come in and provide a grant to help you, and not provide 100% cost, provide some type of cost share, mm-hmm. to help you acquire this technology, just to where it's not an insurmountable cost. And then if that helps them to improve the performance of capturing criminals and putting people in jail, like the rapid DNA technology is a perfect example. Okay. So we've tried to do some of those things. Now, last thing, Brian, and among many others, the last thing that we've done is we've spent a lot of time, and you and I talked about this Social Security thing that goes on, what's called windfall elimination and government pension offset.
Yeah.
This is something that actually it reduces the retirement of law enforcement officers, as well as teachers, firefighters, and others, when they go to retire. That is a disincentive to be a police officer. So we have picked up this effort that has been going on for over 40 years now. We now have approximately 309 co-sponsors out of 435 in the House of Representatives, the third most co-sponsored bill in Congress. It's absolutely remarkable. We had a hearing in Baton Rouge. We're trying to push this bill through to where you don't disincentivize law enforcement by cutting their retirement. You treat them fairly. You respect them like they deserve to be respected, treated like every other person who pays into Social Security. And so that's another thing that we're doing, trying to remove these disincentives to get involved in law enforcement.
Got about a minute or so left with Congressman Garrett Graves. Got to ask you for an update on a completely different topic. I saw on Twitter that the Historic Stadium Caucus is back at it. What's the latest?
I'm sorry, that's the what caucus?
Historic Stadium Caucus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, we're pretty excited about this. Really cool. Brian, look, everybody in South Louisiana's got a memory of walking into Tiger Stadium during football games. I know I remember when I was a kid walking through and looking at the students looking out those little dorm windows in the stadium. I remember some of these historic wins, being in the stadium when we literally trigger the Richter scale, the earthquake measurement devices, because of the roar in Death Valley. And so there's some unique challenges associated with maintaining a stadium that's like this, whenever you're going from being able to hold, 30,000 people to in excess of 100,000 people, maintaining this historic stadium. So what we did is we created a caucus to work together with other similar stadiums around the country that are having similar issues, to where the members of Congress, to where the schools are all working together on best practices, to where we can maintain these historic venues, to where adults don't lose those memories, and you're giving the next generation the opportunity to develop their own memories when they're there with their parents and their grandparents, telling stories about these remarkable experiences in Tiger Stadium and other historic stadiums around the United States.
Well, not to mention the economic driver that is LSU football as well. He is Congressman Garrett Graves.
Details.
He's Congressman Garrett Graves, joins us every week. I appreciate the time, sir.
Thanks, Brian. Have a good day.
Thank you. That was DC Current, presented by the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry.